Last week, we published our first drive of the new 2020 Jeep Gladiator. The long-awaited pickup version of the popular Wrangler is exactly what you'd expect, but its price is raising some eyebrows. Today, I'll be discussing the Gladiator with my co-hosts. The first is MotorOne.com senior editor, Greg Fink.
Hi, John.
And occupying the second chair is associate editor and video producer, Clint Simone. How are you doing, Clint?
Great. How are you doing, John?
Very, very good. So last week, the Gladiator, it actually didn't debut last week. We just published our first drive, which was our first chance behind the wheel of the new Gladiator. And a big point that Jeep made was that it's more than a Wrangler with a bed. And I suppose in one sense it is, but just looking at it, it's a Wrangler with a bed. So let's go around the table and talk about our first impressions of the Gladiator and kind of how we see it impacting the segment it's in, which is a pretty substantial one now. So Clint, how about we start with you?
Yeah, I remember, you know, first seeing the truck when it debuted months ago, and my first impression was it's huge. It's more than just a Wrangler. It's a lot longer than a Wrangler. Let's keep in mind the wheelbase is 19 inches longer. The frame is much longer than a standard Wrangler as well. But then you start looking at the more details with this truck and seeing every little Easter egg from the area code in Ohio emblazoned in the bed to the Bluetooth speaker that fits in the back, knowing that there's a tire pressure system to where you can bring down the tire pressure to your liking going off road, and the horn will honk.
The original H1 Hummer had that, the military spec vehicle where you could deflate the tires when you're going off road from sitting in the cabin. Is that how it works on the Gladiator? Is it in the cabin, or do you have to get out to do that?
It's not quite that cool. I thought that at first as well, but it is very intuitive. You go into the system in the infotainment, you pre-select what you want your tire pressure down to. You go out and manually deflate the tires and the horn will honk when you've achieved that PSI. So it's still a good way. Yeah. You know, if something crazy like an AMG 6x6, you have these overhead switches that, you know, are really, really cool looking in that truck. So it might not quite fit the price point of the Gladiator, but still very intuitive. The point I'm trying to make is that they know their customer base so well, and those details, now that we're getting more of them after the first drive, are just very impressive.
You know, you mentioned the length, and when I first read about the Gladiator specs, that jumped out at me more than anything, because I remember when the Wrangler Unlimited came out, that's the four-door Wrangler, and a lot of Wrangler purists kind of scoffed at it, because of course the longer the vehicle is, the longer the wheelbase, the worse it is at rock crawling, you know, what it's expert at. The Gladiator now has an even longer wheelbase than the Unlimited, and it's also physically longer, so it might be the best off-roading pickup truck you could buy in terms of rock crawling, but it's still significantly compromised from an actual Wrangler, specifically a two-door Wrangler.
That's true. You have the departure angle is different as well. It's the 37 degrees for the Wrangler Unlimited and 26 degrees for the Gladiator. So the sheer length of the thing is going to make it, I don't know, harder to off-road. I think it is as capable, but you're right. You're going to scrape the rear end of it. They put, you know, rock lining not only along the main part of the truck, but underneath the bed as well, knowing that you're probably going to scrape when you're going off-road, especially if you're using the stock tire setup on the Rubicon models or any of the other models.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. And what about the rest of the segment? Because this joins the midsize pickup segment is extremely interesting and active right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we did the first drive of the Ford Ranger just a couple months back in November as well. And that at the time was the latest and greatest addition to the segment. And that truck is very impressive. It's going to sell a bunch. It brings a lineup of just four-cylinder engines, as opposed to a lot of other V6s in the segment, and a lot of intuitive things that just make it a good truck in general. And then you have the Gladiator debut, and it seemed to push the envelope that much further. It has best-in-class towing, best-in-class payload. Those are huge things that matter to those people that are buying those trucks. But beyond that, it's without a doubt the most fun in the segment. You know, it's a convertible, the windshield folds down, all the obvious things you can mention, but in more ways than one, it just seems to push this class even further and kind of hands off the baton to Nissan, which we now know, based off of recent reporting, will debut their new Frontier sometime late next year. It'll go on sale.
And so the other remaining vehicles in the class, the Toyota Tacoma, which has a huge, you know, following of its own, and then the Chevy Colorado, and the, what's the GMC one?
Canyon is the GMC. Honda Ridgeline, if you want to throw that in there as well.
Honda Ridgeline, if you want. Yeah. So after the Frontier is redesigned, replaced, it'll be a completely refreshed entire segment. Like every choice will be within 1 or 2 years old.
Yeah, Tacoma, I guess, would then become the old guy in the crowd again. And even that with all these TRD models. And
I think the Colorado would be the oldest then. That'd be my guess.
Older than the Tacoma. We have to look this up.
Yeah, I thought the Tacoma was just refreshed, not like full redesign, but.
And refreshed is a key word there because, you know, that earlier point I made with the segment's just fun right now. All these different TRD models, the Gladiator bringing a new dose of fun. There's potentially, we always say the words, Ranger Raptor.
Your Ranger Raptor, Colorado ZR2 Bison. There's a lot of fun trim levels in this segment. And if the Ranger Raptor does come, that'll be hopefully amazing, because I just drove an F-150 Raptor and it was, up there with driving, you know, supercars. It's so fun.
Yeah, you forget the magic that most of those off-road vehicles possess. And we focus so much on SUVs and crossovers because that's where the market's at and that's what customers want. But this segment right now, I think, is the most entertaining and probably the most robust in terms of everything that's going on in the industry right now.
Yeah. I mean, aside from SUVs, I think it's one of the fastest growing, just for the sheer number of new entrants that have come in the last few years. So Greg, let me turn to you. How has the Gladiator hit you so far?
Well, I want to get back to this segment being new. We got to remember, we're in North America. So to us, it seems new, but Ranger in Colorado, those are cars that have been around since, I think, the beginning part of this decade, just not here for a couple of years. But for America, it all feels new. Gladiator, I like Gladiator. I mean, good on Jeep. They're doing something that people clearly wanted. AEV was making this truck and selling it for a lot more than they're selling this for, you know, and people were buying them. So if there's a market.
It's almost hard to complain about the price, which I'll get to in a few minutes. But when you make that excellent point that all of the tuning shops out there who have been making Wrangler based pickups for so long, doing conversions that probably cost upwards of $100,000 each. And this one is from the factory with a warranty and everything you love about the Wrangler for considerably less.
And you put a bed topper on the back, which I assume will eventually be offered. And you got a giant, you know, cargo area that's covered.
We published that post this week about, I think it was a Wrangler forum who had done a bunch of renderings of different bed toppers, everything from just normal like cab covers to tents and motorhome stuff and
fastback.
If I bought a pickup, I'd probably instantly put something in there like a camper unit or something. Seeing those renderings is super cool. And I think that's what Wranglers are like. People love customizing their Jeeps.
Well, and that Moab truck that they showed, the Gladiator Way Out, that I guess it's not a topper, but it's got like rails that cover the bed. And then they got the camper on top. That one, yeah, that one's awesome.
Oh, this is going to be the best overlanding vehicle. Like if you want to throw in a tent or get something like one of these aftermarket camper tops and just head off to where there are no roads, this is going to be the vehicle to do it.
FCA quality has been 50-50 sometimes. So hopefully it doesn't leave you stranded somewhere, but you know, it's got like Dana 44 axles available, so it's definitely capable.
I'll tell you what, man, I don't think they're going to have a problem selling every single one of these. And when you look at the whole lineup of Jeep, if you were looking at the auto industry and you were the richest person on earth and said, I want to buy an automaker, is there a better automaker to put your money into than Jeep with its lineup of SUVs, you know, the beloved Wrangler, and now it's getting into trucks? I mean, it's just poised for success, at least in the American market, where these are the vehicles that we are just buying in droves.
I mean, they showed this plug-ins in Geneva not too long ago too. So it seems like it's doing very well. I don't know if very well, I don't know the sales numbers, but not doing poorly in Europe as well.
Yeah. I mean, I remember stories back when, you know, remember all the former owners that that Chrysler had. And there were rumors back in the day that Chrysler itself was being bought just so those owners could get Jeep. Like, there was no value to Dodge or Chrysler, maybe some value to Ram. But back in the day, Ram wasn't a separate brand. But people wanted to get to Jeep because that has so much brand value. It has so much profit built into each unit, so many sales.
I'd argue it's not that different today. I mean, Ram now, but Ram and Jeep.
Ram and Jeep. Yeah, Ram and Jeep are the big value in FCA right now. So let me give my thoughts. I immediately go to price because I'm cheap. And I think, like, if I'm going to enter this segment, price is going to be a pretty big consideration for me. And the Gladiator starting price is not, what is it? It's $33,545. So that's high, but it's not way out of line with the segment. It's definitely on the higher end, but I would expect any Jeep product to have kind of a premium, at least if you're talking about, you know, Wrangler, Gladiator, Grand Cherokee, stuff like that. However, it can get up to over 60,000. As a matter of fact, we built one, and the most expensive, we use the configurator, the most expensive we could get it to is $64,110. That's not quite, but that's almost double the base price, which is not every car can do that. That's that's a talent. And there were some launch edition ones. They opened up ordering for a launch edition model that was about $60,000, and that sold out in one day. So clearly, there's a huge market of people who will pay $50,000-$60,000 plus for a Jeep Gladiator. Now, as far as I know, none of its competitors are cresting $60,000. Some of them can get expensive, easily into the 40,000 and even above 50. But I'm pretty sure Wrangler is tops for price in this segment so far. Sorry, Gladiator. When I think about $64,000-$65,000 for a truck, I just mentioned the F-150 Raptor I had, and it was actually $67,000. It wasn't fully loaded, so it was missing like nav and some of the driver assist systems and all that, but it was $67,000-$68,000. Would I want that or a Gladiator? I'd take the Raptor all day long. I mean, in terms of fun, in terms of power, in terms of performance.
Was the Raptor a two-door or four-door?
Four-door. It was the Super Crew. And What I like about the Raptor, and I don't mean to make this a comparison between that and the Gladiator completely, I reviewed the Raptor, and what I said about it is it's the only truck that can not only go off-road at 2 miles an hour and do the rock crawling that the Jeeps do and all that, it can go off-road at 80 miles an hour, which you're not going to be doing in your Gladiator or your Wrangler. So that's why I think that truck is special. But then even at $65,000, you can look at luxury versions of the F-150, the Ram. Every automaker, every domestic automaker, you know, Ford, Ram, and Chevy each have a new luxury trim level of their trucks. Those are all in the $60,000-$70,000 range. You could even probably get two base Tacomas for $64,000. So the price does kind of get me, and I know I'm being a little unfair because we're talking about the most expensive Gladiator you can configure, but the fact that they sold out of all of those launch edition ones in less than a day, you know, does tell me that they're going to sell a lot of these at $50,000+. So
I think a base work truck has a completely different mission than a $64,000 Gladiator as well. That truck is, it's the only truck you can take the top off and go out on a weekend too and do that kind of stuff. So to me, I can't believe I'm saying this, does warrant that kind of price.
Yeah, it can definitely do things that the others can't. And I think that's why you'll have like members of the Jeep cult who would only ever buy a Wrangler or a Gladiator product. And would never consider, you know, one of these competitors that, you know, can only roll down their windows. Heaven forbid you can't, you know, pop off the doors. Now, we do have some competing products coming from Ford in their new Broncos, and we don't have much information about them, but we do know one version of the Bronco they're going to make does have removable doors and things like a canvas top, and we've seen patent applications from Ford. So that'll make things a lot more interesting when that comes out in terms of another automaker trying to compete with Jeep on its own territory. But as far as we know, there was not going to be a truck version of the Bronco. So the Gladiator, I think, will hold this ground to itself for now, at least.
Well, to me, what was really interesting when you said canvas, it sounded like you said cannabis at first, and a cannabis top would have really, really made it.
That'd be great. Yeah, you can make some hemp fabric and wrap it around your truck. Okay, so we'd love to hear what all of you think about the Gladiator. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at MotorOne.com, where the discussion will continue. And of course, on our website, MotorOne.com, where you can find all of us in the comments. We've written a lot about the Gladiator lately, so there's a lot of articles where discussions about this truck are happening. All right, after the break, we will get into what we're all driving this week. So stick around. During this part of the show, we talk about what cars we're driving this week. And today we're going to start with Clint. Clint, what have you been behind the wheel of this week?
So as has been the case most of the time over the last couple of months, I am in charge of our extensive Motor One fleet of long-term vehicles. And I say extensive as a joke because we have one, but that's great because we get to focus a lot of attention on it and use this car, which is a 2019 Honda Pilot Elite, for all sorts of things. You can follow along hashtag Motor One Pilot. You can find it all over social media. And then on the Motor One website as well, follow that tag Motor One Pilot to keep up with what we've been doing lately. Quick fill in on what that car is. It's a Pilot Elite, and it more or less has every option you can put on the car. It's stacked up real tall. It's $49,065. And now we're going on month five out of the 6 month loan that we have the car for, which is crazy. But toward the end of this time that we have with the Pilot, I'm left wondering about the price tag more than I am the car. I'll say that. The Pilot, being Honda's lone three-row SUV, is extremely capable. It's extremely practical. I've loaded it up with friends, coworkers, family, all sorts of people, and most of the praise is strong. You just wonder, at $50,000, what is that? You know, does the Pilot warrant that kind of price?
Yeah, that's a good question. These all, the three-row SUVs all start around $30,000. So, you know, when they're fully loaded, they're all going to reach into the upper 40s, close to 50. I would say the main reason it doesn't make me flinch is because these are family vehicles. They're mostly being bought by parents. If you look at most minivans, when you option up the minivans, they get up to the exact same price. It's not surprising that they get that high. And I've been in our long-term Honda Pilot. And when you get behind the wheel, it's just, or even as a passenger, perhaps more importantly as a passenger, you get in that thing and it feels solid and well-built and premium, and everything works well and falls to hand. What, like, it is just a very well-designed, well-built vehicle. I think it looks sharp with its recent refresh, and we got a really nice color on ours. It's like, what is it? Like a steely kind of blue?
Steel sapphire metallic is what, I mean, especially where we are down in Miami, sunshine hits it very strong, and it looks like a metallic turquoise almost, but it looks great, especially over the chrome wheels as well. You got 20-inch wheels on it.
A lot of mainstream automakers, your Hondas and your Fords in particular, some others, have done really well with their fully loaded versions of their mainstream vehicles, making them feel very premium. I mean, a lot of these companies have, these automakers have luxury brands right on top of their mainstream brands that they're effectively competing with. And when you have a Honda like this, that is, that feels as well, as good as it does, as feels as premium as it does, why buy the Acura, you know?
I'm actually glad you brought up that point, because I actually prefer the Pilot to its cousin, the Acura MDX. I don't know how Greg feels, but we've had a few luxury SUVs down here, and toward the end of spending a couple of days with them, I'm happy to get back in that Pilot.
I'm pro MDX, I have to say, at the price of our Pilot. I get the Pilot when it's an EX or something, but at a certain price point, I want the luxuries of the MDX.
If the MDX had some of the upgrades that the RDX has, and we're getting into the weeds a little bit, but the new Acura RDX, which is more the compact size instead of the full size of the MDX, only two rows, but it's got that new infotainment system that's really trick and nice. And The RDX is a brand new vehicle, so it feels really up to date. The MDX, I believe, is still using the last gen infotainment system.
And that's correct. And Greg's right. For the price, you do want to start seeing some features that fall into that luxury SUV category. But the Honda Sensing suite, which is crazy impressive with what you get, comes standard on the Pilot. So what you mentioned earlier, John, you know, down in the low to mid 30s, you can get a lot of that equipment. And the safety equipment, Apple CarPlay, those are more or less my favorite features in the entire car. And you can get that much lower in the trim levels. You don't have to spec out the Pilot Elite.
Because I am as cheap as I mentioned before, I would never go for the Elite, especially as you say, the Honda Sensing suite of advanced driver assist systems, the automatic emergency braking, the cruise control, adaptive cruise control, all of that stuff coming standard on even the base model Pilot really makes a case that you don't have to go up to $50,000 to get really, you know, the features that you really want. Greg, let's move on to you. What have you been driving lately?
I am in the Lexus RC350 F Sport. It's the 2019. So it's, you know, facelifted, and they say some other stuff, but really it's just mostly facelifted. It looks a lot better. It's always looked good, but some of the details were a little, I don't know. I didn't really like the like mascara lines underneath the headlights for the DRLs. Now it's all one unit and it's a very attractive car.
This is they recently at the Geneva Motor Show, I believe, debuted a track version of the RC, correct?
It was in Detroit.
It was at the Detroit show, as Clint pointed out.
That's interesting. I also recently read about that it actually can cost more than the Lexus LC. You can option up the track, which the Lexus LC is one of the most beautiful cars on the road today. The RC, to me, doesn't wear the Lexus. It's not even the Lexus face, which I think we all have probably strong opinions on. It's more to the body proportions in general. I'm not a fan of with the RC.
Oh, I like the proportions. And that track edition, for what it's worth, probably a little more fun to drive than the LC. I haven't driven this track edition. And also, it's a limited edition car, so whatever that's worth to somebody.
You're buying a Lexus, so either one you pick, you're going to have that dumb infotainment system with the mouse. And I don't want to review any more Lexuses because I am coming with this deep-seated bias against their vehicles because I hate that infotainment system so much.
Yeah, and it's still there. That's why 2019, they changed the look, so it looks a little better. But like the things like the mouse, still there. It's still a little underpowered. I mean, the 350, it's got 311 horsepower. It's quick enough for normal people. But if we're going to compare apples to apples, it's like a second slower to 60 than a BMW 440i, according to like both manufacturers.
Yeah, over 300 horsepower, but it kind of the seat of the pants did not feel over 300 horsepower. I don't know if you felt like that, or maybe I wasn't digging into the throttle deeply enough.
No, it doesn't have a lot of low-end torque. It's weird. I like naturally aspirated engines a lot because we can't really find them anymore. And this engine sounds really good and it likes to rev a pretty lot. But in the real world, like those little like stop and go parts, you really notice the difference here. And it only has like 280 pound-feet of torque, which again, fine in most situations, but most of its V6 or six-cylinder competitors are making over 300. And it peaks at 4,800 RPM, whereas everything else that's turbo is doing it, you know, a little over 1,000.
So I had a vehicle dropped off yesterday that I will be driving the rest of the week and reviewing for the site. And it is a 2019 Audi Q8, which I'm pretty excited about. And I'd love to tell you what it's like to drive. But I got it just yesterday and I was going to go grocery shopping with it. And I got lazy and fell asleep on the couch instead. So I will have to wait to tell you about it. However, let me, you know, we've all driven a lot of Audis, and I wonder if you guys feel the same about them as I do, which is I feel like I don't need to drive the Q8 to know what it's going to be like, especially because it's kind of like this coupe crossover version of the Q7. It's basically Audi just rearranging its parts into a different shape. It's going to have the same interior. It's going to have same engines, same suspension. You know, I've driven these all in other Audi products. I don't think I'm going to be surprised by everything or anything, but I will say it does look fantastic. So I think I will look better in it than I will have in other Audis I've driven recently.
Well, I'll say two things then. One, it does have that new dual screen infotainment system that the Q7 doesn't have. And two, that MLB platform is really versatile. So even though I'm if I were a gambling man, I bet it does feel a lot like a Q7. We know that platform has gone from everything to Q7 to Bentayga to Urus to Cayenne. So it also could drive incredibly different.
Sure. And I will say I recently did have the Audi A8 with the 2-screen infotainment system, and it was awesome. But Audi has always had excellent interiors. So even though they've just evolved very slowly, this most recent version with the 2 screens, I do really like. And yeah, I guess I'll be interested then to see if the new platform stands out to me. Like I said, I just drove the A8 and I was kind of underwhelmed by it. In terms of driving, that only has the one engine, the V6, and wasn't really exciting in any way. So I will. I've promised my wife I won't be lazy tonight, and I'm going to go grocery shopping. So I will be behind the wheel in a few hours, headed to my local grocer, and probably speeding and taking corners too fast to try it out. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Greg on Twitter at TheFinker, which, by the way, I absolutely love that Twitter handle. That's TheFinker.
Anytime.
And you can follow Clint at Clint Simone.
Yeah.
CLINTSIMONE. And you can follow me on Twitter at John_M_Neff. Thanks to all of you for being here, you guys. I appreciate you taking time away from writing about cars to talk about cars. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.